Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. This week I'm talking to Dori Pickle about her book, Dawn, A Fresh Perspective on Life, Death, and the Other Side. Dori shares the touching story of how her mother, Carly, asked her to write a book based on the beautiful end-of-life visions she experienced during her final days. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. Hi, Dori. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Dawn, A Fresh Perspective on Life, Death, and the Other Side. Could you tell us, how did this book come about?
Yes. Well, my mother was in the hospital about 5 years ago, and in 2019, and I went to visit her, and my dad had called me beforehand and asked me to please come because she was talking about death and dying, and she had pneumonia, but none of us really thought it was that serious. And when I arrived, my dad headed out. He needed some rest. He'd been there in the ICU with her for 2 whole days. And she started talking about this amazing book that she had dreamt about. And it felt so real to her. And she was describing the cover and what it looked like and the message that it contained. And she said it was just like almost like a guide for modern living and that I had to read it. And, you know, I was kind of settling into the room and she was telling me about this book. And she was also telling me all about these visions and dreams she'd been having for the past few days and even months really leading up to this. But specifically the past maybe 48 hours, she had been having these visions of kind of the larger picture of life. And she seemed really excited about all of it, even though she was really sick. And the more we talked, the more I realized that, you know, she was convinced that she was dying and she was confident about these experiences she was having. And so we searched Google and Amazon and tried to find this book that she really felt that she had read. Although she knew it was a dream, she knew she hadn't been on a trip and she hadn't been in the airport finding this book, which is where she envisioned it. And once we discovered it wasn't out there, there are other books called Dawn, D-A-W-N, but not the book she was describing. And not about this topic. And so as soon as we figured out, you know, after about an hour of searching, we resolved that it was not in existence. And she just turned to me and I remember she looked me straight in the eyes and she said, you have to write it. And so we spent the next 3 days with her describing to me in detail the things she was witnessing at death's door.
So the experiences are described as visions. Did she describe how the vision might be different from, say, if it was a dream or a hallucination?
Well, you know, it was almost like it was like a lucid dream or something. I mean, she knew she was dreaming some, but she was fully awake and not altered while describing all of it to me. So she was kind of in and out of dreaming in the nighttime, of course. During the daytime, she was fully awake. And some people who've read the book say, well, you know, she was on hospice care, she was on morphine, and she was not. She was just being treated for pneumonia. So she was on a whole bunch of breathing treatments and things like that. But she was very fully lucid, fully herself, able to have normal conversations. And then mostly, though, she was really focused on communicating all of this to me, because she was determined to make sure I understood the importance of writing it. And I kept saying, you know, Mom, you're going to be on dialysis once you get out of here. And that's the perfect project for you to spend your time on. And she just was convinced that she was dying. And of course, she was right.
What was your interest in this kind of thing before this? Were you atheist? Were you religious?
Great question. Well, I would say I was agnostic. I was not atheist. I definitely have always had a little bit of a spiritual side. And I've always resolved, since I was about 18, I've always resolved that I just don't know. And there's just not enough information to claim to know anything or believe anything. Before that, I was raised in the Church of Christ, which is a very conservative sect of Christianity. And it was very strict and biblically, what's the word? Like literal, you know? So it was biblically literal in the sense that it was very real, that there's like a man in the sky and a devil down in hell. And I just, when I turned 18 or 19, I just really didn't feel a lot of connection with that perspective. And so at the time that this book happened, I was about 45 years old. And I had for 25 years just been kind of comfortable not knowing, being curious, you know, really definitely being very curious and being open to there being lots of things I don't understand, but not feeling any sort of type of belief. And then when this happened, it was very surprising. I was already writing books and I was already kind of engaged with writing. I was writing funny short stories from my childhood and funny stories about my kids and things that happened with them. So I was already a little bit on a writing journey. But this, of course, completely kind of derailed my whole life because she died, which was, of course, very emotional and difficult. And then writing the book became an endeavor that I had to pursue because I promised her that I would. And it really became a little bit of an obsession to get it out onto paper. And it really helped me with my grief too. You know, it really helped me process. It gave me some purpose in communicating the things that she wanted to be known.
So when she started talking like this, when you first arrived, did you have a viewpoint that, this is all made up stuff, that your mum might believe it, but it's not actually real? Or did you straight away kind of think, oh, okay, what's going on here?
Oh, I immediately believed her completely. And she was so confident and passionate and excited about what she was seeing. And that, and we're very close. We've always been very close. I was excited about it. I was engaged with it. I was worried because it sounded like she was convinced she was dying, which I did not personally want to happen, of course. So it concerned me. But on the other hand, the things she was describing and the reality that she was now seeing sounded beautiful and plausible and maybe probable might be too strong of a word, but it was really fascinating.
I think she had visions that were kind of very heavenly, but also some distressing visions. But could you give us an example of one of the positive ones?
Yes. She talked a lot about the nature of our spiritual reality being an upward spiral, kind of like the shape of a tornado or a funnel, and that we are all on this journey up this spiral. And she talked about it being this kind of progressive movement upward. And she talked about on this journey up through this spiral that may take generations or multiple lives to elevate. She talked about the usefulness of forces in your life. And by forces, she meant leaders who can kind of guide you on the right path upward. And it was very positive and beautiful. And she talked about the bottom realm being the physical level where we are all in physical bodies. And as you move up the spiral, it goes from physical to knowledge, the realm of knowledge, then the realm of spirit, And then the final realm, which she had no word for, she said there was no word for it. And I expect that that would be kind of the ultimate, you know, enlightenment or goal. That the description of that and the feeling of it to her was very beautiful and exciting and full of love and hope. And she said several times, there's nothing to be afraid of. And I think she was just really passionate about communicating that what she was seeing on the other side was something to be enjoyed and pursued and looked forward to, rather than something that to be feared or afraid of.
And did she have any visions that were kind of like what you might describe as heaven and people doing things in incredible landscapes? Or was it never like that?
Yes, she did say upon waking up from literally from sleeping, she had a vision of this big, beautiful green hillside, kind of like a park. And she said people were coming, family groups were gathered and sitting on picnic blankets. It was kind of like a tribute. People were coming and going, and it was really beautiful. I don't know exactly if that was part of this other side she was seeing, or maybe it was something that was like a future scene, you know, in the physical realm.
So you also said in the book, you've come to believe that time is vertical and not horizontal. But what did you mean by that?
Yes, that's a great question. I didn't go into that too much in the book because it's really just kind of a notion. You know, when she talks about her visions and the larger spiritual picture being this funnel-shaped spiral, we are building our future one rung at a time, if you will, as you're kind of climbing up the structure one life at a time. And since I've been sitting with that vision and that, you know, concept for the past few years, I started thinking about time. And time is such an abstract, interesting concept in general. And there's so many different, you know, theories about it and how it really, how we perceive it, but it's not really how we perceive it. So I build a lot of timelines in my work because I do graphic design and a lot of companies have timelines, right? So they're always pretty much horizontal. And we think of the past being behind us and the future being ahead of us. I've always pictured it as being kind of like a horizontal plane, if you will. And this has made me start thinking about time as something that's building vertically. And, you know, like we're building on top of the past and we're building up toward the future. And the future, according to her visions and my interpretation of them, you know, the future is unwritten. We don't know what's going to happen. There may be some premonitions or some understanding of what comes next. And I think there are forces bringing us up and forward, helping us make these choices, perhaps, maybe influence. But there is this building that is going up and vertical toward the future. And so I've started thinking of it as a vertical concept that we're moving through.
And you talked about the forces there. Wasn't there a point where your mom said one of the nurses was a force?
Yes, yes. And it was so intense when she did that. She talked about forces being these kind of guides or leaders who are, you know, they've been around the spiral maybe more than the rest of us, or they're older souls, a concept like that. She'd referenced specifically Jesus and Buddha. And she talked about, you know, there are these people in your lives who can really help you go in the right direction. And I think we all have, you know, people in our lives that we would point to as being forces. And she had talked to me about that concept in the hospital. And there was one particular night, I think it was maybe the next to last night with her, This nurse came in and she was very organized and she got everything set up so that the night would go smoothly. And, you know, it's so hard to get rest in hospitals. And I said, oh my goodness, you know, she is just the king of nurses. And I was just kind of joking around and saying how great she was. And my mom sat up and said, she is not the king. God is the king. And I was kind of like, oh, snap, you know, it was just kind of an intense moment. And she said, she is a force. And Karina, the nurse, looked over and she smiled at me and she said, that's right. I've always been a force. And she knew just what she meant, which was amazing because it was, you know, this was a person we hadn't met and it was a little awkward. So it was great that she saw exactly what my mom meant.
So there's these four levels that are kind of in the shape of a tornado. Is there a thing where we're constantly moving up and down it, do you think? Or it's just a one direction, you can only move up?
That's a great question. And it's a question I struggle with because, you know, I only had limited time with her to ask these questions. She only talked about moving upward. She only mentioned an upward direction. So, you know, my guess is that you kind of stay still or you go up. I'm assuming you could go backwards, but she never mentioned that as a possibility. She also seemed to imply that everyone kind of knew, everyone would intuitively move upward and forward in this structure throughout their life and throughout multiple lives, but they would move at their own pace. They're going to take whatever slow or fast journey they're on. It's very individual.
Because it's like you said just then, it's that there's multiple lives, there's reincarnation. And I was just thinking maybe sometimes you reincarnate and you do something and that can take you down a little bit. I almost imagine like a game of snakes and ladders.
Right, right. Kind of like a karma, a puzzle of karma.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I want to be clear that she didn't mention the word reincarnation because I try to be really careful not to put words in her mouth, but I do interpret the movement up the structure requiring multiple lives, or it could be generations. It could be that you're just building on the generations that came before you, and you're bringing all of those ancestors with you as you move up, and maybe they're all helping you move up. Or it could take, you know, thousands or millions of lives. Reincarnating, learning a lesson that you're supposed to learn while you're here.
And did you get the impression there may be guides, like spiritual guides, that are helping you with all this?
Definitely. Definitely. And that's what she talked about with the forces. And since she's passed, I've had so many surreal, seemingly interactions with her that I feel confident that she is helping me. She is guiding me. And I feel her and my grandparents and all of the other people I've loved and lost helping me move forward. And I think that we are all getting that kind of spirit guide assistance. But of course, it's more useful if you are paying attention to it.
Yeah. You say in the book, she kind of said it's not possible to know which level you are on at any given point.
Yes, she did specifically say that, which was interesting and curious because wouldn't it be great to know exactly where you are in your progress? I do think that, you know, she did determine or define that you're only restricted to a physical body when you're in the physical realm, which is the bottom level. So I think if we're all here in human form talking to each other, we're somewhere in that part of things, which is interesting. She did also say that, you know, when you are in this structure, when you're going through your life and you're making progress up this path, that everyone has a path to take that is moving upward. So even if you don't know exactly where you are in that structure or in those levels, you do have a path to take. And maybe that's something that guides are bringing you on at certain points. And maybe at certain points, you're a little bit on your own. She said it was, you know, everyone's connected. You're all part of the same energy, but it is up to the individual to take a certain route.
So it's like you say in the book, we all take a different path.
Exactly. It, even though many of those paths are guided by others or you know, it's all collective. It's all a collective. But those choices, based on her descriptions, are individually based. We do have a lot of say. And that's something I struggle with. You know, if it are things more predetermined than I thought before, I think a lot about, you know, if we have choice. And based on what she said, I think we do. But if we don't learn that lesson in this life, or if there are certain lessons we're supposed to learn in the future, I think we'll be coming back and learning those lessons again.
And I like the description you had of us all taking different paths, where you kind of said it's like climbing a tree and we might take different routes with different branches, but in the end, we all get to the top.
That's exactly right. Yes. And one thing along those same lines that she mentioned was that she said that we have elected to be here at this time in this body to learn specific lessons. And so that's one thing that really keeps sticking with me. And I found really surprising at the time, and I still find it surprising, that, you know, we chose to be here. I chose to be born to my parents in this time, in this body. And there's something, I think, really hopeful in that message, because if you can connect to your own, you know, spiritual self and trust that you are here for a reason, that you somewhere in your consciousness, somewhere in there, you made this election to be here. I find a lot of comfort in that.
Did the medical staff ever indicate that they'd seen other patients having visions and things?
No, not at the time. And she was talking to nurses and doctors and the cleaning crew and, you know, the medical staff, anyone who came in during this 2-day period or so. She was excitedly telling them about it and saying, you know, I wish you could see this. I wish you could see what I am seeing. And she was so excited about it. They did not specifically mention that they had seen this before, but since I, you know, but it was also very busy. Like every time they were in there, it was for taking blood or giving her breathing treatment or talking to us about dialysis or whatever the purpose of the visit was. And when one of her main doctor came in, who was this wonderful guy that we've all known for years, and we've all seen him too. He's a great doctor, just a great person. He did engage with her a little bit in the conversation. And the only thing I think he indicated to us that was, it was concerning that she was really feeling like she was passing away. Whereas the rest of us, even the doctors, we really, you know, thought that she could do dialysis and continue living. So we weren't, it's not like she was in hospice and everybody thought she was dying. You know, we were all a little bit surprised that it was actually a fatal situation.
Okay. And have you done research to see if there's been other things like this? Because I've talked to doctors and nurses who've seen these things, and they refer to them as deathbed visions.
Yes, yes. In writing the book, I did some research. And of course, there's so many physicians and nurses who've seen this before. And one doctor in particular, who is the head of medicine at a New York-based hospital, he says, you know, he he is not the kind of person who would go out and get his palm read or believe in things like that, but that he's been doing it for 20 years. And it's undeniable that there's so much consistency in people's stories at that juncture, you know, right before they pass. And it was a beautiful thing to witness, you know, so unexpected. I was just there to help take care of her and get her back home. We were not on some sort of hospice 30-day countdown or something. You know, it was, she'd been in the hospital multiple times before. And she had had a kidney transplant early in her life. So we knew that, you know, her life would not be, she probably wouldn't live to be 90, but it was unexpected that this happened at this time. And hearing her tell these, explain and describe what she was seeing was so powerful. It did convince me that she knew she was dying, but I still didn't really believe it until it was happening.
And did she ever describe getting visits from deceased loved ones?
No, she did not describe seeing anyone. You know, when she was in the last, I'm trying to figure out how much time it was. I'd say the last 18 hours or so, she was in a medically induced coma because they were trying to save her and do blood transfusions and things like that. So when she was really passing over and in those final hours, she was not conscious.
So there was a phrase in the book that I thought was really interesting, and it's shapes in the clouds. Can you describe what it means?
Yes. So that was something that I was so confused about at the time. So while she was describing this other, you know, all these other realms and the kind of spiral structure of our spiritual reality, she was pausing occasionally and talking about shapes in the clouds. And we all know, you know, when you're a kid, you go out and you lie on the grass and look up at the clouds and they all kind of play with each other and form different shapes. And you can see these abstract, you can see these shapes in the abstract, you know, clouds and how they move. So you might look up and see something that looks like a tree and then it morphs into a dolphin or whatever. And I think everybody's done that when they're kids and hopefully more and more as they're adults. But she talked about the fact that when you're doing that and when you're looking up at the clouds and you're seeing shapes in them or seeing kind of representations of things in this abstract object, that that type of imagination work, the way you're using your brain when you're doing that is exactly the way she was using her brain to see what she was seeing. And she was using it as a metaphor to communicate to me and to anyone else who reads the book or hears about her visions, that, you know, we can all relate to that. We all know what that feels like to look up at a cloud and say, oh, it looks like a heart or it looks like a truck. You know, we all know that that's using your imagination. It's using your brain in a specific way. You're seeing things that aren't really there. But you're making them out, you know, you're able to kind of transpose it into something that you're imagining. And it was very important to her to communicate to me that's how she was using her brain. And she was a really talented musician and composer. And so she had a beautiful and extensive working imagination. And so I think she was able to identify how she was seeing these visions of the other side at death's door. And she was trying to use shapes in the clouds as an analogy to help everybody else understand, you know, how she was able to witness this.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. You talked there about how she was a musician. Did she say that there was music during the visions or other sounds?
Great question. She did have some moments in the hospital where she was hearing music, but that was not abnormal for her. She would wake up hearing music and write it down. It was always kind of a part of her psyche. And interestingly, since she passed, I have started hearing music in my dreams and sometimes as I'm going to sleep or as I'm waking up. And it's very interesting. It kind of makes me feel a little bit like I'm crazy. Like sometimes I sleep with earplugs and I take them out to hear, to see if there's really music playing, and there's not. So it's, I guess, a gift she passed on to me. I don't know. But one time we were in the hospital toward the end there, and she looked to be asleep. But I was trying to let her sleep as much as possible because, you know, the hospital is so exhausting. I don't know about in Britain, but in America it is. Every 10 minutes there's somebody coming in to do something. And so I think she was sleeping. Her hands were up on the hospital tray, you know, that comes and swings over your bed. So it's kind of over her lap. Her hands were on that tray. And she was lying back, and I really thought she was asleep. But her hands were playing she was a pianist, and her hands were playing, trying to play something on that tray, which I thought was really touching.
So she did have distressing visions. Could you describe one of them for us?
Yes. She did have some distressing visions, and one of them was that she felt like she saw hordes of people walking together. She said men were on horseback. Several visions were not good. Many people were distressed in burned out cities. Someone tries to help a child and then someone shoots that child or shoots that person and grabs the child. Things like that. So kind of like a warlike state. I was writing that piece when the war in Ukraine broke out and was seeing on the news visions and scenes just like she had described. I didn't bring that into the book because there's so much distress going on, and I didn't want to, I wanted the book to be as evergreen as possible. But unfortunately, there's so many situations like that. She also had some distressing moments where everything kind of flipped, and she said it seemed like the world, like everything was upside down, and she was quite just stressed and concerned. Most of the visions were very positive and very beautiful. And my interpretation or my understanding of what she was describing was, you know, part of the human dilemma, a part of our stress as of being here on Earth in the physical realm, as being distressing and, you know, it's worrisome, of course, when someone you love is discussing something or seeing something that's so hard to think about like that.
Do you ever get the impression, or have you ever thought that maybe these visions were being given to her, that there was a spirit or what we might call a force, a spiritual force that was, you know, orchestrating all this?
Possibly, yes. I have not thought about that too much, honestly. You know, it just seemed to be kind of flowing through her. And when I thought about it after the fact, you know, because she was a musician, she was a composer. I think that her whole life, really, she was receiving and interpreting and sharing things from the other side, or things from another realm, if you will. So maybe this was just kind of the ultimate extension of that gift of being able to receive and interpret and share.
What was it like for you during this time? I know when my mum was in hospital and she had cancer and we knew she didn't have long left, it was kind of surreal in a way. It's like you have your normal waking state, but it was slightly changed. So how was it for you?
You know, it was concerning. It was scary. It was emotional. When she was describing all these visions and having me write them down, and I, since I'm a designer, I had Photoshop. So I opened Photoshop on my computer and we were mocking it up. All of that part of things was really honestly kind of exciting. It was fun to work with her on trying to understand these things, because my whole life, we've been collaborating on creative projects because she's a musician and I'm a designer. So we would always kind of bounce things off of each other and say, what do you think about this? What do you think about this song? What does it need? And I'd say, oh, it needs more of that part because that's so pretty. Bring that back in, you know, or hey, that part sounds a little redundant, you know, let's shave that off, you know, or I would show her logo designs I was working on and she'd say, oh, that one looks too much like this other thing I've seen, you know? So we would kind of give each other creative input and feedback. So when she was describing this new spiritual realm to me that she was seeing, and I was taking notes on my computer, it was really fun. And honestly, I know that sounds really strange because she was so sick, and I was not convinced she was dying at that time. So it was just an exciting new thing to talk about together. And then when she started really going downhill and her numbers weren't looking good in terms of her kidney function and other medical realities, that's when it got just really scary. And at that point, she wasn't talking too much about this stuff anymore. She was really not well. And so, you know, I was the primary caretaker at that stage. And so I would take walks around the hospital, and one afternoon I sat in the prayer garden and just cried because I just realized that, you know, she might not make it. And so that was very hard, of course. I would go out to my car twice a day or so and just sit in my car and take a break and watch a show and eat a snack, you know, and just kind of physically recover from the stress.
So after she passed, you started getting signs coming through. But could you tell us about that incident where you saw, what was it, the chickadee tattoo?
Yes. And I've had so many more, Simon. It's been a journey. You know, the first one was so palpable. And since then, I've had so many more. I keep a document. I call it the master breadcrumb list because I just add to it every time something happens that is, to me, seems unbelievable. You know, like you mentioned, or like we talked about earlier, you know, I was not a spiritual practicing or religious person before all this happened. So when she died, of course, my head was just spinning with all of these visions she had told me about and the commitment I had made to write this book called Dawn that she told me to write or asked me to write. So I was just kind of beside myself and spent the night with my dad that night after she passed. And I had been up there for about a week and a half. So I had two small children. I needed to get back home. And so I drove home the next morning and just crashed out. And then the next day I got up and, tried to kind of, I don't know what do you do the day after your mom dies? Like, it's such a surreal time. And so I just kind of went about my morning, getting the kids off and then I felt the need to run because I do run every now and then. I'm not a very great runner, but I do enjoy the exercise. And it was 100 and something degrees because Austin, Texas is very, very hot. It was summertime, it's August. And so I went on a run, and about 2 miles from my house is this beautiful, cold, spring-fed pool called Barton Springs. And if I run in the summertime, I always go by there and jump in because it makes it tolerable. And so I went there, and, you know, I was crying during my run. I thought I might throw up. Like, I was just such a mess physically, having no idea how to navigate losing my mom at a young age. And how do I be a parent? And how do I work? How do I make a living after being through something so fundamental? And so I get to the springs, I jump in, I'm relieved from the heat. It's very cold. So, you know, it really is a shock to the system. And I'm sitting back, and there's really not many people there at all because it's morning time. And all of a sudden, I'm staring into the waters. I'm thinking about my mom. I'm thinking about how amazing she was and how strange it is that she's dead. And at the same time, I didn't feel like she was gone. I felt like she was kind of all around me. And that was really kind of shocking to me. And I was also just kind of grappling with it. Like, how am I feeling? How is this feeling possible? And right then, this woman came and sat right in front of me, which was very strange because there was just so much space. It's probably, I don't know how large, it's multiple acres, at least 5 or 10 acres of property. I mean, it's huge. Very strange that she just came and sat right in front of me. And she had a tattoo of a chickadee right on the back of her arm, which when she sat down was right in my line of sight. And the funny thing is that chickadees were kind of like my mom's spirit animal. She loved them, and she had salt and pepper shakers, and they were on her CD with her music, and they just kind of look like her. They're kind of like happy little songbirds. And I just had this feeling, and I think anybody who's had this experience, these kind of otherworldly, surreal sort of experiences, it was a really specific feeling of connection with her. And I know, you know, that it's just a lady with a tattoo who sat down. She's going about her day. But it was so surprising to me that I will never forget the feeling. And I just felt this strong communication from her saying, "It's okay, I'm still here. I'm all around you."
One of the other signs I really liked was you were thinking about signs from her just as you turned on the TV.
Yes. That one was crazy. I had gone to see her doctor 6 months after she died. So it was cold, rainy winter day, 6 months later, January. And I had emailed him or talked to his nurse or something. And I just wanted to say hello and thank you and give him some gifts of gratitude for his help with her. And my timing was very intentional because I didn't want to go and be a sobbing mess in the first few weeks. And I didn't want to wait a year or two where everything was distant and remote. So it had been just about 6 months. I took some of her music CDs to him and we talked and we had a great visit. And as I was leaving the hospital, the pianist, there's a piano in the lobby, which is never being played, but this particular day at this particular moment, it was being played. And he started playing right when I walked past him, right when I was walking out the building, he started playing "It Is Well With My Soul," which was my mom's favorite hymn that she played on the piano. And she had her own arrangement of that she used to play. So I just burst into tears when I got to my car, just feeling like that was a message from her that it was all okay. The name of the song is "It Is Well With My Soul." So I again just felt this strong connection to her and this strong message from her that it was all okay. And I drove home and I was still thinking about this experience of the song starting to play. And I changed into my yoga pants and I got into my bed. I just wanted to sleep and kind of recover from the journey to see the doctor. So I turned the TV on, and when I turned it on, it just randomly chose, you know, it was on whatever station it was on. And it just so happened that at that very moment, it said the word "signs," S-I-G-N-S, you know, in big 2 foot tall white letters on a black background. That's all it said. It said "signs." And I was just kind of like, what is happening? And it was right as I was thinking about the situation with the pianist playing her favorite song. And of course, the TV was stuck on a channel that was starting the Mel Gibson movie "Signs" from 20 years ago. But it was literally stuck, though. I tried to, it wasn't changing. I had to turn the TV off and restart it for it to move on to another channel or another part of the show. And that was so surreal and so impactful. I just sat there and stared at the wall. And I felt like shouting it from the rooftops, honestly. It's one of the things I said in the book. I felt like just telling everybody that she's still here. But I knew how that sounded. You know, I didn't want to alienate me or my family or sound like an unhinged person, but it was happening. And it was this communication that was just so surreal. And I've had multiple other times. There's two times I've literally heard her voice in my head that I didn't talk about in the book, if you're interested in hearing about them.
Yeah.
Well, the first time, there's been two specific times. You know, I feel like I have these interactions. I have these signs. Some of them could be interpreted differently. Some of them, you know, are pretty compelling. For me, as a skeptic, I'd say I'm a skeptic going into all of this. It has been jarring in a positive way, but still a little hard to accept. But there's been times that I can't refuse, like the signs on the TV. That was very interesting. Another time, it was about, it was a few weeks before the signs on the TV. We had bought this farm out in the country, and the farm came with donkeys, which is not something you really necessarily, you know, just do, but we decided to do it. And that ties back to a whole other story that if you have time for, I'll tell it to you, but it's just so many signs from my mom. And this place had donkeys. We loved the donkeys. They had a little baby donkey. They were adorable. We would go out and pet them and feed them and stuff. And we had some friends out this particular day, and we were feeding the donkeys carrots. And it's a cold day, so I had on a coat. And I was standing in front of the male donkey, the big, you know, he's the size of a small, wide horse, you know, full-size donkey. And the other donkeys were still eating their carrots nearby. And I think he thought I put carrots in my pocket. But what happened was he knocked me to the ground with his big head and stood on me and started biting my stomach. And it was a full attack that was very, very scary. And in the back of my head, as I am falling to the ground under attack from this large animal, which sounds hilarious. Being bitten by a donkey sounds funny, but you know, in reality, it was really terrifying. In the back of my head, in the front of my head, I'm screaming. I'm freaking out. I think I'm dying. In the back of my head, I hear my mom's voice, and she's talking to someone else. And she says, here's where the donkey gets her. And it's like she was narrating the situation. And I remember at the time I'm being bitten by this wild ant, you know, just like, and my friends are trying to get it off of me and we have to go straight to the hospital and it's a big mess. But I heard her distinctly talking about it. And I remember being so confused and in the ER, just being like, I heard my mom and she was referencing this. She's watching it. It was a wild experience because it was so visceral. It was like I could literally hear her voice.
And it's such a weird thing to say in a way. It's like you say, she was like narrating it. And was it just a level voice? Was there any emotion to it?
Not really, other than just kind of like, it was kind of like, oh, here it goes, you know, kind of like that. And it was maybe it was my extreme intense emotions of the moment being able to tap into her commentary. It didn't seem like she was talking to me. It seemed like she was talking kind of to someone else. Like, here it goes, you know. And it was, of course, it was one of the most terrifying moments in my life. And it just so happened that I just literally heard her saying that. The next time I heard her voice was very interesting. It was a few months later after that. And I had been drinking, honestly, I'll just confess to you. I had been drinking a lot since my mom had died because I already had been drinking wine every night, at least one or two glasses of wine. And after she died, I kind of had this built-in excuse and I started drinking two or three glasses of wine every night. And at some point around this time, around January, February, after she died, 6 months later or so, I decided to stop drinking completely because I thought I could potentially connect with her in my dreams. And I couldn't dream very well. I couldn't sleep well while I was drinking. And I needed to for my health. I needed to just completely stop for a while. And so about 3 weeks after I had stopped drinking, I had started dreaming quite a bit after being sober, which was interesting. I love dreaming. And so it was this wonderful new gift that I was kind of intentionally trying to harness, you know, getting back to dreaming and having a dream life. And I really, really missed her. And I felt like it, even if it's not real, you know, even if it's just in my mind, I would love to have some interactions with her in my dreams. And so that was a big part of quitting drinking, which most of my friends and family don't really know. It really was a health thing, but it was also to see my mom. And so I had stopped drinking. I had started dreaming. And this one particular night, I was kind of in the half awake, half sleep, just about to go to sleep. You know, I was had my eye mask on and I was very close to sleep. And I heard my conscious brain or my subconscious brain having a conversation with my mom, and I heard her voice. And I sat up in bed and they both stopped as if I'd walked into the room and caught them. And it was like my subconscious self and my mom. And what they said was, it was really innocuous. I spoke first. I said, "Mom, I'm going to Dallas with Dad next week and I think it's going to be really good for us." And she said, "Oh, honey, I know. It's going to be great." And right then, I sat up in bed and looked around and was like, "Who is that?" You know, I mean, I heard these voices. And right then, I realized that while that was happening, I felt her presence over my head, and everything around my head was glowing in orange and pink and salmon and peach, all these red hot colors. And I felt this very specific feeling that was very electrical. It was as if I was being plugged into the outlet in the wall. And it was very vibrant and energetic. and very hot and just full of vibrancy. And I'll never forget it. And the next morning, I was trying to mock it up in Photoshop and it looks super creepy. So I'd never share it with anyone. But I was trying to retain the vision somehow. And right then I was describing it to my husband and telling him how strange it was and how it was like I had interrupted a conversation I was having in a different part of my brain or something. And I had somehow become aware of it. And I was telling my husband all about the feeling and how strange the feeling was, because it wasn't just a thought or a little dream or something that I was, you know, experiencing in my mind. It was a physical sensation of warmth and being charged, being like plugged into the wall kind of thing. And right then, my younger son, who would have been about 10 years old at the time, he walked into the room singing, "Hold on to that feeling." How does the whole lyric go? It's the Journey song. "Don't stop believing, hold on to that feeling." And he was just singing that verse over and over at the breakfast table. And I just remember being like, how does he even know that song? Second of all, yes, I can't stop believing. I have to hold on to that feeling. It's a very specific feeling.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Dawn, A Fresh Perspective on Life, Death, and the Other Side. So how can people get hold of the book?
Thank you so much. It's been so great talking with you. We have a website up called dawnthebook.com, dawnthebook.com. And I'll also be launching the audiobook soon. So that was a real pleasure to produce, because I integrated a bunch of my mom's music into the audiobook. So I think that will be adding something special to that piece of things. So yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon.
So this week I was talking to Dori Pickle about her book, Dawn, A Fresh Perspective on Life, Death, and the Other Side. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. So you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.